As you know, Jeff Merrick is one of the most talented broadcasters on this podcast.
Not true.
What you may not know is that he literally has, what, about 27 jobs right now with Sportsnet?
Trying to take all of them. Trying to take all Why? Of them between doing features with Strombo, and he's traveling earlier on this week, so I'm getting guest Strombos on that feature that runs in, what is it, 26 markets across the country, Maddie? 26,
Listen 27? To that.
Maddie produces that little feature. And then there's, of course, this podcast. There's a junior podcast. There's a Thursday night national game. There's our junior hockey package. There's a Saturday night preview show. And tonight I'm doing the – actually, I'm really stoked about tonight, Wish. Tonight, this is the hockey geek in me comes out, doing the minor midget OHL Cup final between the Toronto Marlboros and the Don Mills Flyers tonight on Sportsnet 1. And guess who my analyst is? You're going to love this. See, RJ and Sam are doing the call. So RJ Broadhead and Sam Cosentino are doing the call. Guess who I'm working with tonight? My analyst tonight. First time I'm like, I never thought this would ever happen. Don Cherry.
Who?
Me and Grapes.
Wait, what?
He is really? Honestly, he spends him and his son Tim, who's one of the leading minor midget scouts in the province. He spends most of his time watching minor midget hockey games and going to rinks. And it's actually his idea that Sportsnet aired the final of the OHL Cup. Marlies and Don Mills with Scott Moore. Actually, essentially said, you know, Scott, you should air this thing. And Scott said, well, we'll do it if you show up. And Don's like, all right, done. So I'm working with Grapes tonight. doing the minor midget final tonight. OHL
That's
Cup.
Pretty awesome.
It's going to it's cool.
You're working the desk and you're going to say, you just, you know, Grapes, what'd you think about this one? And he'll talk.
Like, all right, Don, like tell us about Brett Newman. Tell us about Cody Clark. Tell us about Ryan McLeod. Yeah.
Wow.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
That's crazy.
It's great hockey. Sportsnet 1 tonight. I can't pimp it out enough. It's going to be it's because this is like the next step for these kids is drafted into the OHL. And you'll probably see draft picks number 1 and 2 in tonight's game. Number 1 will probably be a kid by the name of David Levin. He'll probably go to Sudbury. They draft first overall. And then Ryan McLeod, who plays with the Marlies, will go. Well, here's the thing where Levin is interesting. He was raised in Israel and only learned how to skate, I think, like 3.5, 4 years ago. And this guy's got, honestly, Wish, he's like, whenever I watch him play, he's like Adam Oates, but can skate. Like, you should see this kid's hands. They are fantastic.
So what you're saying, Jeff Merrick, hold on.
But
what you're saying is that there is a legitimate chance that we, in a few years, may no longer be able to refer to Jeff Halpern as hockey's leading Jew?
Oh,
what are you trying to tell me?
Right, as far as right now, he'll be like the first to my knowledge, actually from Israel to play in the NHL if he gets that far. And we'll see what happens in his OHL career. But this kid, David Levin, is fantastic. You should see his hands. Remarkable. And then Ryan McLeod, who's the complete package, 6'3", 190 pounds, I want to say, can fly, can create. He'll probably go number 2 to the, who drafts second? Windsor Spitfires. His brother plays in Mississauga, but he's not going to fall that far to 4. So. But should be a good game. Should be a lot of fun. Wendell Clark's son is in the game. So you can have a look at him. There's actually some interesting bloodlines in this one.
Future Leafs draft pick, Wendell Clark's son. Let's be honest here.
Okay, so I'm doing a bunch of prep for this. I'm learning about all these kids, and I'm doing some stuff on the weekend with the Don Mills Flyers. There's a kid who is number 72 by the name of Liam Dennison. And so I'm doing a little background check on him and learning the bio. And man, did I start to feel old because he is, wait for it, Andy.
No, no. Okay,
go. Liam Dennison.
No, go ahead.
No, Liam Dennison.
Go ahead.
He is Andy Van Helleman's grandson. It's one thing to be the son. Like, Wendell Clark's son is playing in this. And then Andy Van Helleman's grandson is in this game. Oh, man, am I old.
Wait, hold on. When are these kids born? What's their birth year?
2000.
Shut the fuck up.
Well, most of them are 99s. A couple are 2000s. Most of them are 99.
See, that's where I thought you were going with that. I can't.
Most of them are 99.
I can't.
I know.
I can't.
Sorry. Happens.
I was just talking with Ruby the other day about the idea of kids who grew up in this world without any knowledge of 9/11. Like, they live in a post 9/11 world, like, completely.
Yep.
And then earlier today, before the podcast, I you know, acknowledged the fact that
I say snark Connor on McDavid.
Connor McDavid is so lucky. In the sense that he has grown up in this game of ours without having to suffer through a Canadian Stanley Cup. And, like, that is such a beautiful thing to be able to say.
It was funny.
Imagine that world. Yeah. Imagine that world where all you know, like, for all Connor McDavid knows, The Stanley Cup was created and invented to reward the American franchises in this league for doing so well. Then that's why Canada never gets it, because they're ineligible. That's so beautiful.
What you're saying is, in Connor McDavid's world, the Detroit Red Wings are the Montreal Canadiens.
Imagine growing up and having absolutely no expectation whatsoever that Canada ever wins the cup. Imagine living in a world where there isn't this notion of, it's Canada's cup, but we're keeping it warm for them. Imagine that. He believes the cup belongs to the United States. There's something so beautiful about that. Yeah. He probably wants to go play in Arizona or Buffalo, because that's the only way he's going to be able to win the cup.
That's where the Stanley Cup goes. Beautiful. All those American teams.
That's where the cup goes. It goes to
Matthew, America. Matthew Strome in the game as well, too. He's another of the Strome brothers, poised to hit the OHL. Dylan Strome was 6 points yesterday in the OHL scoring title, for those that care about that kind of information. The Stromes poised to become the next Stalls of the NHL.
Mm.
So should be a good one tonight. Should be fun. Should be a good game.
In the sense that one will eventually force a trade to join the other.
Could be. But we'll see where Dylan goes. It's funny, because I talked to two teams on the weekend, and both have uh-huh. Dylan Strome in at number three over Noah Hanifin.
Do you agree with that?
No, I like Noah Hanifin still at number three, but I like Dylan Strome in that 4-5 area with, you know, Mitch Marner and Lawson Krause. And, yes, I am the guy that will put Ivan Provorov in that conversation as well, the Brandon Wheat Kings defenseman. He's just that good. Kid's phenomenal.
Now, why, when you say that you would put him in that conversation, I mean, are there people that simply don't acknowledge he's that good, or like, what do you mean by that? Sounds like you're doing it despite public opinion.
A lot of people sort of have Provorov in that 8-12 area, and I mean, it all comes down to what your own scouts believe, but sort of consensus of publication, like the ISSs of the world, you know, the central scouting of central scouting services of the world, generally tend to have a player like Ivan Provorov in as high as 8, although some people have him higher, but most have him in between 8 and 12. I just think this kid is so good.
So there's not some super
I would have
bias
him,
against
no,
him.
Like if he
underrated.
If he went number 4, I think a lot of people would be shocked, but I wouldn't. Just from watching him covering our junior hockey package this year. He's big, he's strong, he can skate, he's not shy. And he uses, actually, when you see this guy, have a look at the length of his hockey stick, because he uses a 2-inch extension on it. He's a defenseman, and he's got this 2-inch extension on his stick. It's like old Scotty Bowman style, where all the defensemen have to have long stick. That's right. Yeah, I know. Make it work for you. But yeah, I put Provorov in there.
Little stick extender.
I don't know. Well, we could all use it. I know I could.
Since we're talking about this now, we should probably set up a little McDavid Derby action here. Buffalo continues to lead. They've got 47 points. They've got 72 games. Arizona, 50 points, 73 games. At Edmonton, 53 and 72. So Buffalo has a game in hand on Arizona, and they're 3 points ahead of them and back. I don't know how to phrase it, but here's the thing. The Coyotes have successfully lost 6 in a row. They're 1-8-1, and Buffalo is 1-7-2. This is pretty amazing. 26-30, right? Yeah. In the last, last 50 games, I guess, for these teams, and I don't know how many of them have been against each other, but for Carolina, Toronto, Edmonton, Arizona, Buffalo, 50 games combined, they've won 8 of 50.
Well done, gentlemen. Bravo. You are... You are teaching a master's course in how to do this. Once the season is done, you are teaching a PhD course in how to do this.
Do you think Buffalo maintains, though?
I think they have.
I mean, it is clear that the Coyotes are poised to continue this trajectory.
I think the Coyotes are, but listen, I'm not counting out the Buffalo Sabres and the fine work that Tim Murray has done, to the point where I'm sure he's scared to travel on the team bus or the team plane, because either the coaching staff or the players will want to beat him up for what he's done to this team this year. Every time a goalie makes a save, he gets traded.
John Hoven, who writes Mayor's Manor, which is a great LA Kings blog, did an interview last week with Shane Doan that I never got around to writing about. And I was wondering about Doan. What do you think? I mean, clearly he's made a bad choice. Okay,
I don't know.
When he decided to go back to Arizona, he did so for his family and the whole thing, and that's fine. But from a hockey perspective, from a winning the cup perspective, which obviously is not a priority for him, he's made a bad choice. So the question then becomes, what do you do if you're Shane Doan? Do you stick around for the deep dive rebuild with trying to create a front line with Domi and Duclair at some point? Do you ask out? Do you retire? What do you do if you're Shane Doan this summer? What do you think?
You stay. Isn't that – I mean, Shane Doan's had – I mean, I know for a fact that various people in the Blues organization basically begged Shane Doan when he was available to go to St. Louis. I know there were times
Vancouver as well. Vancouver wanted him badly.
Calgary, yeah. Flames made overtures a number of years ago to try to get Shane Doan. So a lot of teams have tried, and he's always said no because he's comfortable there. And his family, like, we never put it. I think we put so much stock in because we follow this game and follow it by way of, you know, every player has to want to win the Stanley Cup and that burning desire and all that. And I tend to think that we forget that there are just some people that are comfortable where they are because their family is comfortable. Like, if you move away from your family and you don't see them or you only see them, you know, faintly for a year and a half, is it worth it? Because at the end you get a ring. Hey, look, I was alienated from my family for almost 2 years, but I got a ring and we can go to Front and Young Street and there's a silver mug and my name is on it. Is it worth it? Like, if you're comfy, you're comfy.
Depends on your priorities, man. It depends on your priorities. Like, if you're going to be – what if you're someone who looks back at your career and says, well, I had the opportunity to be a part of this team that ended up winning that season, and I didn't take it, and now I see all my peers, and they had pretty rings, and they had a chance to experience the whole thing and take the cup back to the hometown and have the rally inside the auditorium and then have ice cream at the old ice cream shop.
But here's my question, too. I wonder how many of those players that just go just to chase the cup and leave a franchise of 16 or 18 years, I wonder how much of that they feel is sort of fraudulent. Because they didn't build that. They were the last piece to come on at the end. Like, they weren't there to build it. You know, they were there for the final push and then the parade once they won the cup. Like, do you think Ray Bourque feels as much of that the Colorado Cup as Joe Sakic and Peter Forsberg and Rob Blake and Adam Foote? The answer you're looking for is no, Greg.
No, because ultimately, if these guys get all mercenary up in this piece and they head out to these teams and then they win a cup as a piece of somebody else's puzzle, ultimately it's because it didn't work out in the team they were with. Like, you don't see a guy going from contender to contender necessarily. It's usually a team that's on a downslope. Veteran guys like, I'm jumping off the ship now. I'm going to one that's built sturdier. So I think at the end of the day, they're going to think to themselves, okay, well, we may have had our window of opportunity back a few years back, like Bourque certainly did with the Bruins. Mm-hmm. But the way that the team is managed now and mismanaged now, we're clearly not going to be going anywhere as a franchise in my waning years. So I'm jumping ship. So I think ultimately if a guy like Doan jumped ship this summer, went to a team, won the cup, would he regret not winning one with Phoenix? Absolutely. Or with Arizona? Absolutely. Because he loves that franchise. He probably knows what it would mean for that franchise to have a prolonged playoff run that ends with a cup. Would he feel like the cup is somehow cheapened because he didn't win it with Arizona? I don't know. I don't think he would, because ultimately I don't think he's the guy building the team. And I think that he's put in his time there, and he should feel comfortable that if he did contribute something to a team's cup run that wasn't simply just fourth line minutes like a Brandon Morrow or something, then he should feel pretty good about things.
What if he's just happy? What if he's just happy being a hockey player in the desert, being a leader on the team, being a leader in that community? You like what that state has done and that city has done for your family. What it's done for you and your wife, what it's done for your kids. What if you're just happy? Like, it is possible for that to trump a Stanley Cup.
Absolutely. You love working at the bank. You love handing out lollipops to the kids that come to the bank with their parents and talking to old man Withers down the street about opening up a Christmas club so you can always have some money on hand around the holidays. You wear a nice one of your three suits. You work 9 to 5. Sometimes they let you inside the vault and you can look around and poke around and have fun in the vault. It's a good time too.
Yeah.
Now granted, there are other people that you know that, became, you know, the bank president. And his photo gets to be on the wall of the bank president's HQ. Yeah. He gets to have keys to the executive washroom, and many will remember him as being an influential part.
But who's happier? We always assume that success equals happiness, though. We always assume that success equals happiness, and it doesn't.
Does the bank president get a chance to be on the bowling team? No, he doesn't get a chance to. You do. Granted, the bank manager is having has a golden parachute and a small statue being built for him inside the foyer of the bank management building. But does he get a chance to go out to Chipotle for lunch with the friends and your buddies down at the other branch?
I listen to a lot of Buddhist podcasts, and one that I was listening to Buddhist podcast.
Buddhist?
Yes.
Like podcasts about Buddhism.
Correct. About Buddhism and meditation. So when I was listening to a couple of years ago, Dalai Lama was giving a speech, and he was talking about, because you know he occupies a certain level of fame, okay, when it comes to, you know, Buddhism. He's very well known all around the world, and he goes and speaks at sold out arenas consistently. And the point that he made was, you know, as much as I go to, you know, rich people's houses, you know, because he knows a lot of people that hold upper rank in our society. And he says, you know, whenever I go to their houses, you know, you go to their medicine cabinet in their bathroom, and it's full of antidepressants. And people's lives are full of, you know, drug abuse and alcoholism and depression. And you don't see that with people of quote unquote lower rank, generally speaking. So just because you're wildly successful, just because you're super rich with the golden parachute, doesn't mean that you don't have stresses that other people don't. And I would even make the argument, I mean, this is why, you know, people say, well, you become conservative when you have something to conserve. And that's true. And what that comes along with, I think, is a lot of insecurity and fear and paranoia. So once upon a time, I used to say, yeah, man, if you can be rich, you win the game, you get the golden parachute, all that stuff. That's the stuff that really matters. But I don't think that it does anymore. And maybe that's just where Shane Doan is at. He's really happy with that organization in that spot with his family there. And it's okay that you don't win the Stanley Cup. Lots of great hockey players have not won the Stanley Cup.
I think what your story has taught us all, Jeff, is that when you are someone of great spiritual import and you are grounded and you have found your center and that you understand the priorities in life,
at the end
of the day, are still a fucking snoop who goes through other people's medicine cabinets, when you're guests in their houses.
Yeah. I think I've mentioned this.
No, but seriously.
I think I've mentioned this trick before, by the way. If you're ever having a party and you're concerned about people going through your medicine cabinet before the party, fill your medicine cabinet with marbles. The minute anyone tries to open it and sneak in, it's impossible not to bust them. I'm telling you, have it, and someone will do it because someone's always going to snoop in your, just see, like, oh, really, what's going on in their lives? So fill your medicine cabinet with marbles.
If that happened to me, because undoubtedly it would, I would just look the host of the party straight in the face and be like, well, I found the marbles.
Yeah, someone said there's marbles in there, and I went and found them. I just came to say, hey, man, I was looking for a couple. Yeah, I was looking for a couple roach
clips. Wish your party was more exciting. I found the marbles, though, and now we can play marbles. Yeah. No, but to speak to your point, though, honestly, the last thing we'll say about this, because I know we have to get rock and rolling here with guests and everything, but if the way that that hockey is gamed, and you know this better than anybody, is that if you don't win, your career is diminished. It's just how it is. And whether that's fair or not, that's always going to be the measure.
No,
for
anybody in this league who played this many years and didn't
end up hoisting the cup at some point.
I still think Gilbert Perreault is a great hockey player. And I still think that
Bernie Federko or so on and so forth. Mike Gartner, so on and so forth. But I mean, those guys are all mentioned in one breath, and then guys who've won are mentioned in another. That's just how it is. But if Shane Doan or anybody of his ilk can find that measure of self-satisfaction and feel as though that they've had the career they want to have and that they stayed in the market they wanted to be in and are comfortable with the idea that they didn't go mercenary and try to win late in their career. I mean, more power to them. They're better men than me.
Yeah, I would chase
the dragon if I was.
I know you would. Our guest is standing by. Wish, why don't we introduce him?
Ladies and gentlemen, Gary Galley is a man who's going to tell us a thing or two about a thing or two about the Ottawa Senators. He's a co-host, former co-host on Team 1200, color commentator, Hockey Night in Canada. And Gary joins us now. Did you ever think about a month ago we'd see the Sens in a position this late in the season to move into a wild card spot with a win tonight, Gary?
No, I did not. Certainly, in order to have a run like we've been seeing, a lot of factors have to, you know, come into play. And any time all these factors align, sort of like the stars all aligning in the right place, it's not just an exciting thing for Ottawa fans. It's an exciting thing for the National Hockey League, for the fans, if you're a fan of hockey, to witness such an incredible turnaround. A team that looked like they may be fighting for the lottery and getting a real good draft pick, maybe in the top five, ends up putting themselves in a position where they can insert themselves into the wild card spot and be in the playoffs. And that would be an incredible chain of events, certainly from looking back at February 11th, February 12th, where they were so many points back, 10 points back. And to see that now is crazy.
Gary, we focus so much on Andrew Hammond and for obvious reasons, and the throwing hamburgers on the ice and the win streak is impressive. And this is, you know, one of the great stories of the year in the NHL. But isn't the real story here that when you're looking for a hero, when you're looking for a game changer, when you're looking to find someone who can turn your season and franchise around, damn it, you go to Bowling Green, where they make great goaltenders and great defensemen, right, Gary?
You know, he could have been from Mars. No one would have cared. I mean, just the way he's playing. But yeah, you know, a Bowling Green alumni for sure, and certainly nice to see. Got a chance to meet Andrew at Bowling Green a few years back, and certainly happy for him. It's the kind of run that every player dreams about, especially a goaltender, where the ball is sitting in your lap and you're carrying it. And I said this in the broadcast the other night, that make no mistake, if the Senators are going anywhere, it will be on the back of Andrew Hammond at this point. And that's exactly what's going to happen. I think with Craig Anderson, there's just too many question marks. That hand or that bone bruise or whatever has taken place there has just not healed properly. Every time he seems to try to get himself back ready to play, I think there are setbacks going on. The hand doesn't probably feel as good as it should, and I think that's a going concern. And for right now, you can take a deep breath because you've got a guy in your net like Andrew Hammond who's playing as well as he is. So, man, we're just going to keep riding this thing, and I think that's what they will do now moving forward, because they can't afford to look at another direction at this point. They've got to go with the girl that you brought to the dance, right? And that's Andrew Hammond.
The thing about the Senators that I find interesting, to kind of speak to what Merrick just said, is that you also have a situation where the coach doesn't seem to be getting much credit either. Dave Cameron comes in after the firing of Paul McLean. McLean really well-liked. I think the numbers showed a law of diminishing returns with his work. But is there anything coaching-wise specifically that you've seen since he took over that's really helped enable all this to happen as well?
Well, certainly. I've often said this, and this isn't a shot at Dave Cameron whatsoever, but just in general, that, you know, great goaltenders can make good coaches.
Yep.
And you look at certain teams that have had wonderful goaltenders that come in and just play consistent over years, and their coaches, staff, and their records seem to be equally running at the same pace. So, yes, but I think Dave Cameron has brought more tempo to the Ottawa Senators. I commented this during the broadcast tonight as well, that the rhythm of their game seems to be more in tune, seems to be at a higher speed. The quality of their play and execution seems to have improved. Andrew Hammond does get a lot of credit here, and the players would certainly hand it over to him as well. But I think the play of Mark Methot has really stabilized Carlson. I think, Carlson is, I think they're like a +7 in the last two games, the two of them, +14 combined. Carlson went from a minus five, or minus nine to a plus five since he started playing with Bethot when he returned. So there's some comfortability there. I think Carlson has had the second half of the season has been a Norris Trophy worthy second half. His first half, not even close, but the second half has been really good. And the change was in there as well. I think the change to go to the younger players, let the younger players play, let them have ownership in what's going on, I think has made a huge difference in this team. That's why the tempo and the excitement and everything has just been amplified. And these are all real positive things that have, I think, have changed from the managerial spot right down to the coaching staff. They made these changes. You know, I mentioned the guy like Condra. He sat out 14 games under Paul McLean. He hasn't sat out one under Cameron, and he has been a real bright spot on that line with Pageau and Lazar. I mean, that's their third line right now. I mean, he puts Hoffman on the fourth line because he'd been really quiet through the month of March, so he slid him onto the fourth line and gave Pumpel a chance to move up onto that second line. And what does Hoffman do? He scores and sets up another and has, I thought, one of the better games the other night he's had in a while. So he's pushing all the right buttons, so you got to give him a ton of credit.
I'm glad you mentioned Mathot, because that's what I wanted to get to here with you, Gary. And you play defense, as we all know. And as much as this is about Andrew Hammond, it sort of did coincide with Mark Mathot's return. Does Mark Mathot get enough credit? And if he doesn't, tell us why he should.
Well, you know, a few years back when he first got to Ottawa, he was having an amazing year. And I mentioned at the end of that season, I thought he was worthy of being on Team Canada's radar. And I think a lot of people shook their head and eventually he was. And he was part of that, that training camp where they had a chance, he had a chance to go out and rub elbows with all these great players. And I think it's really pushed him to be even better. And this injury has really set him back, and the contract negotiation and all that stuff is all settled now. This is a guy from Ottawa who wants to be in Ottawa. He's got a great relationship with Eric Carlson. They're good friends, not just teammates, but they're good friends away from the ice as well. And I think that creates a real good bond between people. I know that when I played with Dmitry Yuskevich, we were not only defense partners, we were very good friends off the ice as well. And I think it transcends on the ice and you even care more. So having those two guys back together and solidifying that pairing and, that one guy who stays at home and watches the store while the other guy goes out and freelances, I mean, that's, you know, the Brian Leetch Bookaboom kind of pairing. You know, I'm going back here, I know, but it just pops to my mind. But you know, the ability to let him loose a little bit, knowing that other guy there can pick up some of the mess that's left over, but still give him confidence. And I think Mark Mathot deserves a lot of credit. I also think the play of Milan Mikolic, been really good. When you look at that game against Boston, when they really needed to win. Mikolic gets the goal. Turris gets two goals. Bobby Ryan gets the game-winning goal. Leguan scores. All the older veteran players kicked in. And I think it's important that we don't forget those guys either. They don't have a lot of veteran guys with Neil and Phillips and guys like that who are not in the lineup and Anderson now. But they do have enough veteran guys there that are going, hey, don't forget about us. We're here as well. So it really has been a sprinkle of everything here that's really helped this thing get where it's at.
And on the defensive front, I was going to ask you about that too, as a much respected former NHL D-man yourself. I was going through my Norris ballot earlier today, and I was thinking to myself, I got Doughty 1 for a lot of reasons. I think PK might be 2, Letang in the neighborhood of 3. Then I'm thinking Weber, because he's so good, but then again, maybe, I don't know, maybe I knock him down a little bit because I think Josie's had a better year. And then I come to Carlson, and I'm thinking to myself, there's no logical reason why Carlson shouldn't be like 2 on my list, but yet there's something in the back of my mind that's always somehow going to hold it against him for being more one-dimensional than he probably is. Tell me why I'm completely wrong about Eric Carlson.
Well, I think it's easy when you look at a guy who puts up the numbers he does, and it's certainly the risk versus reward, right? That's the one thing I think Dave Cameron has got a little more out of him with, is that he's, even though we know he's going to take risks, and risks are part of his game, he still has to look at the risk and say, okay, I'm going to take risks, but what are the percentages when I take this risk? He has to evaluate that in a split second as he does things on the ice, because if this guy's not jumping up with the play, if he's not making things happen on the ice, they don't score as much. There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, look at the plus minus in 2 games. They're plus 7. I mean, this guy makes things happen on the ice, and that's part of their identity. So, yes, are you going to shake your head some nights and go, oh, boy, that's not what I would want. But at the end of the day, he does a lot of creating, and that's something that a lot of defensemen in this league can't do. So he's a little bit different. So when his numbers are so good offensively, you tend to overlook it. But when his numbers are up there with other players, you tend to say, well, you know, is he out killing penalties all the time? Is he, you know, is he out in the last shift of a game? He's all the important things that a Norris Trophy winner does sometimes. I think those are important to look at. And certainly, you know, I look at Doughty and Weber as two guys to me that, you know, Weber's always been that also-ran, right? He's always been that guy there, you know, runner-up, never winner. I think people are sentimental favorite towards Weber, but how do you overlook Drew Doughty? Two Stanley Cups. He's been a huge part of it. The guy logs crazy, a minute muncher like you can't believe, and he is so talented. We saw him in the Olympics. I mean, for this guy not to have a Norris Trophy by now is kind of scary. So, you know, I get it. I get why everybody's looking at these other people. I think Erik Karlsson has had a great second half to the season. I think that is an amazing thing in itself. It's a big story why they're where they are. But Norris Trophy winners, to me, have to play a complete. They have to have that magical season like Giordano was having. It's such a shame that he got hurt, because that's really the guy that probably was, in my heart, thinking if he could have finished the season healthy, man, everyone would have wanted to vote for that guy because of what he'd done. So it's hard, but certainly you're talking about so many greatly talented guys that, you know, it's hard to make a mistake. But you're right. With Giordano getting hurt, it does the bingo ball start bouncing everywhere, you know?
I want to create three awards this year, like special recognition medals that we can give to Giordano for the season he had. Give one to Dubnyk, who probably isn't going to win anything, but should win something for the season he's had. Give one to Babcock, who can't win the Jack Adams unless they gut the team, and he somehow makes the playoffs after that. Like, all three of those guys deserve something this year. None of them will win anything for various reasons. But Giordano, just every time somebody mentions him in the Norris, it just breaks my heart, because two years running now, he's been the best defenseman in the league until injury happens.
Yeah, it is a shame. I was there at the game. He got hurt and came out and tried to take the warm up. And, you know, I saw him downstairs, you know, working out and trying to get ready. And I felt terrible for him. I really did. I mean, I've never been a guy up in that echelon where, you know, I was looked at as a Norris Trophy winner. But I can imagine if I was, you know, and that happened, I know it would tear your heart out that you're putting that together. But I think he's always been a guy that's worried more about his team than himself anyway. And that's why. That's what makes him special. You know, he doesn't get caught up in all that, and I believe he will come back and be a force to be reckoned with next year as well. It just that's what drives him. He's a great, great, great person, not just an hockey player, but a real good person and well liked. So, I gotta tell you, I do feel bad for him.
Last one for me, Gary, and thanks for your time. Your thoughts on how the position since you retired has changed? What the role of the defenseman since Gary Galley called it a career with the Islanders to where it's at now?
Oh boy, you're in a forest amongst redwoods now. I mean, these are big guys. Big. I remember standing on the blue line when I was playing my last year in Long Island, and I convinced my family to come up and live with me that year. We were, you know, I was surprised that I was going to Long Island. I thought I was going to retire, and so they came to Long Island, and here I am. Here I am sitting on the blue line for the opening introductions, and my kids are turned to my wife, and they're going, "Mom, Dad's going to get killed." Like, you know, Chara and all beside me, and Erik Karen, and, you know, and all these big guys. It was nobody under 6'2", and I think the size and mobility of these guys now is incredible. And you know what? You take out the red line. You take up holdups. You take out the goalie playing the puck. Hey, I play with Hexie. Yep. You didn't go back and get a puck. He passed the puck and shot the puck harder than you anyway. So why would you go back? All you did was peel off to the side, and you never took a hit. I mean, you play now in this game as a defenseman. You can't hold up for a partner, and you can't, you know, the people are touch up, offside, dump in, no red line, speed, north, south. I mean, it is a tough position to play, and you can't clutch or grab or hang on anymore. So, you know, it's tough to be a defenseman in this game. I know the most important position is goaltending, but I do believe the hardest position to play is defense. And that's why they're like gold, especially if you get a right-hand one. It's like finding gold in your sock, you know, but that's what I think.
I'd also proffer that it's the most thankless position. Like a goalie bails out his team and all of a sudden he's like king shit, right? I mean, he's either the hero or the goat. Forwards never get too much crap for defensive lapses. Yet if a defenseman makes a mistake on a play, it's usually on him more than a goalie when it comes to blame for a goal. I think being a defenseman in the NHL or any level is one of the most thankless positions, because you never get to score the game winner necessarily, but you might give up the game winner.
I tried telling that to Pat Quinn a few times when I was playing for him a long time ago. He wasn't buying it.
Well, I buy it, Gary. I'm with you. I'm friend of the defenseman.
Well, that's awesome.
I'll be sending you a Christmas gift next year.
Oh, very good.
Gary
awesome.
Galley, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, Gary.
Thank you for your time, sir.
Right,
we'll talk to you soon.
You guys take care, man.
There he is, Gary Galley, former NHLer. That must have been bizarre, too. I don't think that would have been Chara's first year. Probably would have been 2 or 3 years into his career. But you can imagine that last wave of defensemen before Chara came in and sort of redefined how a large man, like a man that large, could play the position. I mean, once upon a time, mm-hmm. Greg, growing up, I thought that Larry Robinson was the biggest defenseman I would ever see. Like, in his day, Larry Robinson was Zdeno Chara. Like, make no mistake about it. He was big. He could move his feet. Offensively gifted. He could handle his mitts. He would drop big guy. Like, you remember when he beat up Dave Schultz? I mean, that was it. That changed the balance of power in the NHL. And here was a guy who, you know, wasn't a slugger. He just happened to be really good and big and strong and could handle his mitts. Larry Robinson was Chara before there was Chara. And I thought, wow, that's about as big as a defenseman can be and still play this game.
And still play well, right.
Right.
Because we had like, I think of like a guy, the biggest defenseman that I remember watching, because mm-hmm. I was a little bit too young for Larry's like prime.
He was great.
Was probably, who was taller? I think Shel Samuelson was taller than Ulf, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, the human tripod. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
Thank you.
That's okay.
Jesus Christ, Merrick.
No, so it's not that way, you chimp. That's when I think it was one of the writers that gave him that name, because they had that long stick as well. There you go.
More. I have the unfortunate honor of being able to confirm that's also Zdeno Chara's nickname.
Swing at the same pitch twice. Okay, very good.
Oh my God.
Okay.
I didn't know Big Ben had a pendulum. Here's the thing, right? Shel Samuelson was a player of some height.
Yep.
He was a player of some size. But like that was your quintessential, like remember when everybody tried to get their big ass Lindros type center, but only half of them could actually play hockey.
Hey, Chris Bratton, that how was
that. Samuelson was such like, you look at him and you're just like, oh, he should be able to dominate everybody. It's like watching a man against boys. But no, I mean, it just wasn't there for him in the same way that it was for Chara. Like Chara was a redefinition of what a big body defenseman could do in this league.
Yeah, 100%. Although I hope that it's just a blip on the radar a year and he bounces back next year, but watching him slow down at times is cringeworthy. Like, how many games how many close games have we seen? You know, one goal game, Bruins got to get back in it, and Chara's not on the ice.
Yeah, and so, okay, we should probably talk about that, actually, because we just put Ottawa over in a pretty big way, and they obviously have an opportunity tonight to move into sole possession of the last wild card spot if they beat the Sharks. Boston loses to Tampa. They lose in a shootout to Florida. Door wide open now for both Ottawa and Florida. Florida did their part, man. Florida needed to take two in some way, shape, or form against Boston.
Yep.
Took two.
Okay.
Now they've got 4 points on the table against the Bruins still left. The Bruins are flailing and struggling, and here comes Ottawa, and here comes Florida, and it is dire times for the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, and you know, the two big injuries crushed them. The Krejci situation and Chara's injury, and then just Chara slowing down. Soft seasons from players they thought would be ready to take that next step in Riley Smith and Torrey Krug. You know, you've found some youngsters you think have a future in Ryan Spooner and David Pastrnak, but probably not ready for first line time right now. It's awkward.
Yeah,
it's awkward for the Boston Bruins. But to me, just the visual of Chara slowing down the way that he has this year, to me, just kind of, because you love the idea of that guy in the NHL, right? He's Shrek. Like, you just love the idea that, hey, look, Shrek plays hockey on that team that wears black and gold. This is pretty cool. Like, you knew when he slowed down, it was going to be fast. You know, it's to the point where you almost say to yourself, no one's going to take the contract, but if they could move Chara for something, do you think they would? I might proffer yes.
You don't think anybody would take the contract?
That's a lot for how he's slowing down now. I don't know. That's a tough one, man.
It'd behoove them to find a way to take the contract off. Boy, that I'll tell you, man. I understand why they had to do it, but I think that look, Chiarelli is always going to get dinged for Sagan, and I will always get his back for Sagan because I don't think it would have worked. I just don't think it would have worked in Boston. The way the team was, where he was in his life, I don't think it would have worked. I don't give Chiarelli the same grief that probably the people signing his paycheck would about the way the Sagan thing's gone.
I wasn't a fan of the deal.
That said, your cap management made it so you had to deal away Johnny Boychuk.
Mm-hmm.
And you could argue that that move is the reason Boston's in the pickle it's in, because when Chara went down, now all of a sudden there was a complete just gaping hole on your blue line.
Yeah, I think that I don't know this for 100%, but I'm pretty sure that Pete Chiarelli has the option on next year.
But if
the Boston, yeah, but if the Boston Bruins don't make the playoffs, I mean, he can exercise that option. But
well, if the Boston Bruins don't make the playoffs, I think the big conversation is about Julian.
He just re-upped, $3 million a copy.
Doesn't matter.
Wow.
What are you going to do, keep him around? Team him make the playoffs? Call it a blip?
Is it coaching or is it composition?
It's composition, but the other thing is the...
So you're going to have them both? You're going to whack both?
There's people way above Chiarelli's pay grade that hate Julian.
True, but then he just re-upped for three more. Is it 3 more years that he got or 4? A 3 a copy.
Oh, that's like 5 styrofoam cups for
Jeremy Jacobs. Yeah. I know what you mean, but I just don't know that. I don't know the situation where we have 2 firings as opposed to 1.
Meanwhile, everybody on the West Bubble plays tonight. So if you are a fan of playoff hockey.
God, tonight.
They don't all play
one.
Each other, unfortunately. Calgary and Colorado is the only matchup that is a direct one. And I mean, Colorado's boned anyway. I mean, they only have 24 non-shootout victories, so they're done. But you have Minnesota at Toronto, Winnipeg at Edmonton, the Kings at the Devils, San Jose at Ottawa, and then, of course, Dallas hosting Buffalo. Lindy Ruff going to do all the Sabres fans a solid by beating the Sabres. This could be another fascinating one tonight, and the way it's starting to shake, if the playoffs started today, Calgary-Vancouver in the first round, dude, that'd be a ton of fun.
That would be a ton of fun, and people have made this point before that Vancouver is kind of, as far as work ethic goes, Calgary light in some ways. Like, there's more of an overlap in the way that they play than there is difference. That could be an interesting series.
Nashville-Chicago, interesting series. St. Louis-Minnesota would be a real interesting series. Anaheim-Winnipeg would be interesting only because you have Cinderella versus the coach that can't win in the playoffs.
Who would the chant be about? Gabby?
Getzlaff's hair, maybe.
Ah, good one. Right. Yeah. Maybe some about Corey Perry.
Rangers in Boston will be the series that NBC puts on every night, even though it should be the Islanders and Penguins on every night. And then Montreal when at Washington's kind of a fascinating one, too. That'd be really fun. Actually, Jesus Christ, Carey Price versus Ovechkin in the first round?
That'd be fun. Well, I was going to say Carey Price versus Braden Holtby.
All of the East matchups right now are bitchin' cool. Price versus Ovechkin, the Yzerman Cup, Boston and the Rangers, and the Islanders in Pittsburgh. All of them are super-duper watchable.
Pittsburgh bows out in the first round. What happens?
They make a run at Babcock and give Babcock player personnel control.
Yep, maybe.
That's what I think they do. It may not happen. I mean, this would just be pie in the sky. But, that's what I think. I wanted to talk about Sid, actually, today on the show.
Okay.
Because, as you know, Sidney Crosby is now your leading point scorer in the National Hockey League, despite having a terrible season.
And he's so awful, he's going to win the Art Ross Trophy. What's wrong with Sidney? It's just the Habs. What's wrong with Montreal? He might win the President's Trophy. That's what's wrong with him.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting to note, though, that statistically this is his worst offensive season by far.
Bad offensive season for everybody, though.
I know. 1.10 points per game average is significantly lower than the rest of his career, even his rookie season. Goals per game, the last time he was below 0.4 was 2011-12, and that was obviously a 22-game campaign for Sid. It's not a very good offensive season for him, and he's going to maybe win the Art Ross despite all that, as Michael Reagan says to the question of the day, which is describe Sidney Crosby's season thus far in five words or less, great but not Crosby great. Fair?
Yes, but no one's Getzlaff great, and no one's Kopitar great, and no one's Taves great, and no one's Weber great, and no one's Doughty great. Carey Price is Carey Price great. He might be the only one, but at every offensive position, every offensive stat, it's down across the board. Like, you can say the same thing you can say about Sidney Crosby, you can say about anyone else who's amongst that. Of the people that we consider, and there are always, you know, the outliers that jump up, and before the injury, Tyler Seguin and Jake Voracek are having exceptional seasons by their standards. But most of the heavyweights are not having years that we're accustomed to, except for maybe Alexander Ovechkin. Maybe you throw him. And maybe throw Ovechkin to that mix.
Adam Wrightson, not as good as Ovechkin.
Not as good as Ovechkin. Yeah.
Colin maybe. Martin, solid for anyone but him. Pragmatic. This is a pretty good one. Maybe I do need wingers. I think the two things that we have to realize about Crosby are three things about Crosby are this. Shooting percentage wise, it's been an atrocious season, which tells you that there's some bad puck luck happening. The fact is that the new coach, Mike Johnston, is preaching a different kind of hockey and Sid is buying in. And the fact is that the offensive stats across the board for the Penguins are down. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is Pascal Dupuis kind of important.
Mm-hmm.
And no Dupuis.
Oh, you mean the guy that was the throw-in in the Hossa deal who just supposed to kill penalties? That guy?
Right, the Dupuis trade, right.
Okay, yeah.
was supposed to be the Angelo Esposito trade, but it didn't work out.
Oof.
No, the loss of Dupuis, and I know that even if it's sometimes it's a case where people are like, oh, well, Dupuis might not have even been playing with Sid, but having Dupuis resets the forward group, allows a little bit more flexibility up front, and I just think that you cannot downplay the importance of somebody who creates the kind of space that Dupuis does in the offensive zone for Sid.
Yep, 100%. And we know he has been frustrated for a number of years, and you just wonder if, depending on what happens in the playoffs, if this is the summer that Sid finally says, get me someone to play with. Enough of this. Enough of this. I don't care what it takes, Jim. I need someone to play with out there.
Well, that was going to be David Perron, no?
I'm talking like top-level guy.
Oh, like a Marian Hossa type.
Who he had once upon a time.
Casey Johnston writes in, mumps baby scoring title, wow. That's another thing, too.
Yeah, don't forget.
The man had the mumps.
Man, how come we stopped talking about mumps? Doesn't mumps seem like a million years ago? Yet it was the biggest story. It was the biggest story in the NHL. This was the year of the mumps.
It went from the year of the mumps to the year of the
goalie who
came out of nowhere and saved his team.
The year of the backup. It went from the year of the mumps to the year of the backup goaltender. Whether it's Cam Talbot or Devin Dubnyk or Andrew Hammond, it's the year of the mumps and the backup goaltenders this year. So as we all predicted, the storylines are pretty much consistent with what everyone sort of crystal balled this year. But I mean, we were talking about mumps. I know I was on this podcast saying, what if it affects a playoff series? You know, what if like one of the, because there really didn't seem like there was going to be an end to this. Like mumps was just playing hopscotch and it was going from team to team. And it was going to keep going around the 30-team NHL until someone really got dinged in the playoffs by it. But doesn't that seem like a million years ago?
Crosby's season in five words or less from Michael Perino. The closing of the window. Ouch, Penguins fans. Ouchie hurdy.
Want some wingers.
I don't know. You talk about the Bruins in the first round and what that might end up looking like. But again, that the Penguins situation is just as tenuous.
Although you can look at the Penguins and say, you know what? They're a little bit weak on their back end right now, but they have players that are developing. I think the loss of Olli Maatta is a huge one, but he'll rejoin them the mix. Derek Pouliot's going to be a good defenseman. Brian Dumoulin's going to be a good defenseman. Scott Harrington's going to be a good defenseman. Maybe it's just a matter of waiting until these guys are ready to be ushered into big-time service in the NHL. But then if you're Sidney Crosby, you say to yourself, I'm going to wait how long now?
I think you could be really happy with the year Fleury had.
Oh, 100%.
Fleury could be top three for the Vezina this year, depending on where people put Dubnyk.
Yep.
But you could be really happy about the year he had. And look at they're dangerous ass team.
Mike Bales. I mean, like, Mike Bales, right? You talking about unsung guys? You know, look what Mitch Korn has done this year. Look what Mike Bales has done this year.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what Sean Burke did for the Minnesota Wild / Devin Dubnyk.
If you're the Penguins, do you want to pull Montreal in the first round or the Islanders in the first round?
I would rather. Oh, jeez, that Carey Price. I would rather pull Montreal because the Islanders have made it too scary close in the past. And they can score a number of different ways.
That's the thing. A bit better Montreal on the offensive depth front than Montreal. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd take
now,
Montreal.
I mean, think about Montreal. I mean, let's be fair here. I mean, Pittsburgh's not exactly a model of offensive depth either. And you know that they're going to trot out PK and Markov against Sid. In theory, I mean, I don't know. I think they'll definitely put Plekanec's line on Sid's for sure.
Yes, that will be a matchup for sure. 100%.
That'd be a fun one. Mm-hmm. It'd be a fun series. God, we got a lot of interesting, cool playoffs.
Looks great.
And then, but in the West, we don't even know how the hell it's going to shake out.
Yeah, I just want to see the Cats in. I'm back on. I was like down for a while, but now I want Cats back in. I was like, that's it for the season. The Boston Bruins.
See, the thing about the LA Kings is that we're probably going to, it's either going to be them out or playing Vancouver in the first round. When the matchup we all really want to see is them and the Duckies in the first round. But I think if they get in, it's going to be through the division and not through the
wild card. You think it's taking Calgary's spot as opposed to Winnipeg's?
Yeah, I'm starting to think that.
Well, Winnipeg's got the 4-point cushion and Calgary's only got 2. That doesn't make sense. I just can't wrap my head around LA not making the playoffs right now.
They have a game against Calgary left. They're on a 5-game road trip right now. Devils, Rangers, Islanders, Minnesota, Chicago.
Yeah. I know, and it hasn't been exactly.
And then they have to do Alberta and Vancouver after that. Yeah. That's a lot of time on the road. Who designed this stupid ass schedule?
Hey man, teams put in their veils. Teams put in their veils.
Three at home and 8 on the road for the Kings.
Teams put in their veils. Don't pin it all on Steve Hatzepetros. When's your arena available? I'll make the schedule accordingly.
I would never put it all in that man.
Well, like how long was because there was curling at Scotiabank Saddledome for a couple of weeks. So the Flames had their extended road trip, sort of their junior team, the Hitmen, who spent 11 games on the road. The Calgary Hitmen.
Right.
I'm not sure how many the Flames did, but they're away from Calgary for a long time too. So,
right,
it's not just them going the big stretches.
Ilya Kovalchuk, there's a report in a Finnish sports publication today that Ilya Kovalchuk has made overtures to the management of SKA.
Yeah, imagine that.
About coming back to the National Hockey League, not next year, but the year after. And that last year, 2016-17, would be the last year of his contract in the KHL. So he would have to forego the last year of his deal there to come back to the NHL.
Yeah.
But evidently he wants to. And the question then becomes, will they let him back in?
The question becomes, let's see, Ilya, how closely are you monitoring the ruble versus the Canadian dollar? Because the NHL salary cap is pretty tied to the Canadian dollar as well here. So let's not pretend that there are untold fortunes back in the National Hockey League.
I have a feeling he's okay on money. I have a feeling that maybe, you know, he's done okay over there with the money thing.
He's done just fine, thank you very much. But there's still always room for more.
He wants to come back. He wants to challenge the best players in the world. He wants to, you know, do all that and come back and play and yada, yada, yada. But the essential thing is this, okay? He needs to get approval from all 30 general managers to get back in.
Yes.
As an unrestricted free agent.
Correct.
If he doesn't get that, he has to sit out a year and then still get the Devils seal a stamp of approval before he comes back in.
Right.
I've seen a lot of people today be like, oh, well, obviously Lou's going to block this like Dikembe Mutombo. And I'm like, why?
Why? He did him solid.
I still say the Devils were in on that salad, by the way. I don't buy for a millisecond that the smartest man in hockey doesn't sit there and be like, oh, I see this could be mutually beneficial.
Probably the agent as well.
They're all very cunning.
I would have to think the agent as well. Like, okay.
Here's how we get out of this pickle.
I
signed Volchenkov, and I signed Hedberg for you. time to do Lou a solid.
That's right. A little something for Lou here. Let's go. Butter the bread on both sides.
I signed a shot blocking piece of driftwood and a backup goaltender for a goalie who never rests. time to do Uncle Lou a solid.
And they did, or else they'd be stuck, man. Oof. That'd be a tough one.
I'd love to see him back,
but I'd love to see him back at the height of his powers.
But I don't know if he'll ever be at the height of his powers.
There's only been one player that I've seen go to the KHL and come back better, and we just talked about him. That's Mark Giordano. Are there any other players that have gone to the KHL and come back a better player? Now, Giordano only went for the 1 year because of the contract impasse with Calgary, where Daryl Sutter only offered him a two-way and he wanted a one-way. He said, all right, I'm going to the KHL. But has there been anyone else that came back a better player from the KHL?
It's a tough one to answer because we've not seen the Bobby Orr of Russia, Kevin Dahlman, come back yet. So I assume that it'll happen when he comes back. No, that's a great question. And the other interesting question is, listen, there is absolutely no doubt that the NHL is a better place when you have the best players in the world playing in it.
100%.
So that then it becomes a situation of, can Gary lean on these guys in the league hard enough to say, let Kovalchuk back in, knowing that there's going to be 29 teams that don't win his services, and knowing that if he waited until he was 35 to come back, he can come in without any approval whatsoever.
It's not exactly a secret around the NHL that when there's a new owner in the league, part of the responsibility and obligation of the commissioner's office is to instruct the new owner on the lay of the land, and which general managers are available and what their history is and what they've done to help their teams and also what they've done to help the league and help the game. I don't think that is lost on any of the general managers in the NHL, if you catch my drift, wish.
Congratulations on your new franchise. Here's an instruction manual on what to do. It says here, support what I want.
Here's who to hire, here's not who to hire.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, listen, that is a legitimate thing for that commissioner to do as well. I mean, there's a lot of sort of quote-unquote non-hockey people that come in, and part of the obligation of for Bettman is to say, hey, listen, this guy is available, this is what he's done in the past, this is how he may be able to work for your organization. Make your hire accordingly. But there are, you know, there are recommendations that come from the commissioner's office, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say I would imagine. I know.
I don't know, and I also don't know what the veracity of this report is and everything else. But I do know that like the report I saw said he's been making 15 million euros a season in the KHL, and obviously keeping all of it. So I think he's okay on money.
He gets it all in a brown paper bag at the end of the week.
Right.
Puts it under his pillow.
The KHL stories are amazing.
Oh yeah.
So he should
the Bagman.
Right.
The Bagman stories are great.
Yep, they are.
Everyone's got one too.
So, yeah, I don't know. I would love to see him back. I would hate to see him in another uniform because I kind of liked him as a Devil. I harbor no ill will towards Kovalchuk. The Devil or that trade. The Devils got a cup run out of him, and he was outside of Marty the reason they went on that run.
And they loved him in the room, contrary to what a lot of people tried to sell you.
I got no beef with Ilya Kovalchuk, despite him shanghaiing high in the league and go to the KHL and retiring and all that bullshit. It was a trade worth making. So it would be really fun to see him go someplace. Listen, let's be honest here. Let's come on. Everybody crowd around the podcast. And we could all tell the truth here.
All right.
It'd be really fun to see him play with Malkin.
Oh, in Los Angeles?
No. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Or somewhere not Pittsburgh? It would be fun to see him play with Malkin.
I still want to see another star there. I want to see them become the Miami Heat and have three legit huge offensive stars on that team with Sid and Gino. Like to speak to what you just said, I want to see him. Can they get Phil?
Sure, why not? Although I think Might be someone closer to USA Hockey who ends up with Phil. I can still see him going to Nashville. I really can. On the right side with James Neal.
I saw Drager said this morning that he felt that Phil's value has dropped because he's had a really bad second part of the season.
Don't believe
it. Do you buy that?
Nope.
I don't either. I think it's a stupid
Everyone knows what's happening in Toronto.
Of course they do. I mean, if anything, I mean, the problem with the Leafs right now isn't that Phil's stock has dropped because of his play. It's that everyone knows that they need to move him.
Yeah.
That's
the organization has given up on the team. The fans have given up on the team.
Yeah.
Yeah, we expect the team to go out there and perform like they're the 1974 Flyers. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Great. So if you go to a garage sale and you see a lamp and you're like, oh, that lamp doesn't look like it's as bright as it should be. Oh, wait, hold on a fucking second. I'm at a garage sale. That's why it costs as much as it does. You understand? Okay, good. That is the show for this Monday.
Yeah, let me remind everybody, if I can do a quick plug-a-rama again.
Please do.
Tonight, 7:30 Eastern on Sportsnet 1, it is the final of the OHL Cup, the Toronto Marlies facing off against the Don Mills Flyers. Me and Grapes alongside RJ Broadhead and Sam Cosentino with the call. Minor midget hockey. This is it. This is the big kahuna, the big fish, the OHL Cup. The Marlies and the Flyers. Sportsnet 1 tonight, 7:30 Eastern.
Support Jeff Merrick and all of his Sportsnet jobs.
Just support minor hockey. Support my jobs because my strategy with all these jobs, whenever I talk to kids that are getting in the industry, I always tell them the same thing. Do as many things as possible. That way, if they try to fire you, it'll affect too many departments. If you just work in one department, they fire you, well, then that one department has to worry about it. If you work in like four or five, then you got a headache. That, my friends, is job security.
Yes.
Well, as much as you can get in this industry.
Yes. And then also, rest in peace, Maryland Terrapins. A humbling loss to West Virginia yesterday. Good to know that West Virginia, I understand they got electricity just in time to watch that game yesterday.
Oh, very good.
So that's exciting to see. Nice. Do you go vote in the For the Win / USA Today craft beer bracket? Not only because Ruby designed the bracket, but because it's an interesting thing to see all the beers compared to each other. Even if the Virginians who created the bracket decided to put over DC Brow and Devil's Backbone, but failed to mention New Jersey's own Flying Fish.
Wow.
It's very disturbing. I know.
Wow. What kind of God would allow that? A cruel and spiteful one, Greg. A cruel and spiteful one.
And I think that's about it. I had a guest in town, and if you're coming, everybody's always asking, oh, what should I do if I come to New York?
No.
What is the thing that I should do when I come?
Call Greg.
I'll don't call me, but well, you come. No, I'll come find you. You don't have to call me or show up in my apartment. That's a little creepy. but unless you're invited, of course, then please do. No, don't. If I invite you, just assume I didn't mean to.
Just doing it out of social graces.
Yeah,
just
to be nice. As I've learned in working on myself over the years, I am an appeaser who can never say no to anybody.
Playing the role of a nice guy on the podcast is Greg Wyshynski. But we assure you, ladies and gentlemen, it is just an act.
Go to the Intrepid. I had been to the Intrepid in many moons. The Intrepid, for those who don't know, including Jeff Merrick probably,
it's a
decommissioned aircraft carrier.
What?
Yeah.
Really? I like the sounds of this.
It's in New York Harbor, and it's friggin' awesome. I hadn't been there in years. They made it real cool. Not only do they have the usual, like, decommissioned planes, like the Blackbird and things like that are really awesome on deck. You get to go inside. You get to see where all the crew members live. They have a submarine you can walk through. But now they got the Space Shuttle Enterprise there, too. And
that sounds fantastic.
It's the whole and right now, if you want to go, there's a special anniversary celebration of the Hubble, which is also pretty cool, too. And I will leave you with this, which is that you probably remember this. I completely forgot about it. I forgot that when they first started to use the Hubble telescope, the thing wouldn't work, and all it did was take blurry pictures. you remember this?
No, I don't.
Yeah, so when the Hubble first started to be operated and we were trying to take pictures of other galaxies and stuff,
yeah.
Everything that came back looked like a child's crayon drawing put under a faucet. It was terrible.
Hmm.
I read something while I was there that said, and this should be a life lesson for all of you about the difference between success and failure. They found out that the calibration of the mirrors inside the telescope were off by less than the width of a human hair. And once it was recalibrated, the most vivid and amazing pictures of celestial bodies and galaxies and stars were delivered to us because they recalibrated the mirrors by the width of less than a human hair.
Wow. And so to extrapolate then, as we flounder around trying to make meaning out of our universe, Greg, not just maybe out of our universe, but out of our day-to-day lives, are you saying that perhaps somewhere down the road we're going to figure out a way to recalibrate our brains so we can actually see and experience and taste and feel and touch everything that is actually around us? Just a matter of calibration?
I think the great Wayne Gretzky said it best when he says, you have to take all of the shots all the time because why pass to Curry?
Right. I think actually Mick Shrimpton in Spinal Tap said it best when asked what he would do if there was no rock and roll in the world. After pausing for a brief second, he said, well, as long as there's sex and drugs, I can really do without the rock and roll. Good point.
Amen to that. Thank you to Maddie Brown. Thank you to Gary Galley. I'm back tomorrow. You are not?
No, I've got a sales event. I got a cool job. So I got to do the sales event tomorrow. You know what my sales event consists of?
What are you sending autographs?
No, I'm playing hockey at the Air Canada Center for 5 hours with clients.
Oh, dude, really?
Yeah, 5 hours at the Air Canada Center playing hockey.
That's not bad at all. I thought you were going to tell me you had to be like a model at a car show or something.
No, I hate doing that kind of stuff. I always feel embarrassed.
And over here, ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Barrick. You may know him from fill-in work on Hockey Central.
Yeah, exactly. He's when Darren's not around, when he has something better to do, Jeff goes in.
Hey, I just want to say I was a big fan of your work with the Boston Bruins.
Oh, actually, that was PJ Stock. I'm Jeff Merrick. Oh, yeah. I don't know who you are.
No, sorry. Hey, you know what? How come things never worked out with you in the St. Louis Blues? Oh, that was Merrick Schwartz. I'm a different brand altogether. Yeah, sorry.
I thought you were playing with the Red Wings.
Dude, I remember when the Buffalo Sabres drafted you in the first round out of Chicoutimi, man. Whatever happened? Oh, that was Merrick Zagropan. Sorry, it's a different Merrick altogether. I apologize. The wrong guy.
All
right. Dude, that goal you scored between your legs against the Capitals in the shootout, that was amazing. Then you did that Statue of Liberty salute along the... yeah, that was me. That was me. I'm Merrick Malik. Okay, I gotta go now.
All right. I think we've exhausted all the Merricks.
I think all the Merricks that we know. Yeah.
All right, everybody. Back tomorrow.
Man, when you had that burlap sack over your head... No, that's John Merrick, the elephant man. I'm Jeff Merrick. No, thank... Okay, that's the last one. Now I'm really going.
I am more than a Sportsnet announcer. I'm a human being.
I don't know why John Merrick sounds exactly like Adam Sandler.
But you know.
I'm standing up now. Man. I'm turning my microphone off.
I'm going away. The elephant man.
I'm holding up my papers. Picking up my car keys. Picking up my phone.
Got
it on my iPod.
Peanuts.
My pass card.
All right, everybody. We'll see you around. Bye.